I'm John.
John.
I was thinking while Oscar was giving his talk about my childhood. My childhood was filled with a pervasive feeling of doom and fear. And it wasn't because I was beaten or abused or punished in any severe kind of way, although I know a lot of people have had that kind of experience. I grew up with the feeling that I had to try and control what was going on with my parents, what was going on with my sister. My father was a mechanic, and then he opened a bunch of auto parts stores. And he was very focused on his business, and my mother helped him. She did the bookkeeping. The problem with that was that he spent 99% of his time working on that business. That was his security. And my mother hated doing bookkeeping. She wanted to be, she wanted to go to college and be an archaeologist. And in those days, in the 50s, you did what you had to do, and you suppressed all the resentment and all the disagreement and all of the rage and whatever negative feelings that you had. And so that's what my parents did. My father suppressed his resentment that he couldn't control his employees and he couldn't really control that business or his wife or his children. My mother suppressed all of her resentment at having to do a job and work with people that she didn't like for decades. And the way that worked was my father came home and he had a drink or two drinks, and then, as the years went by, my mother started drinking more and more and hiding bottles in the laundry and various parts of the house. And and we all just pretended that it wasn't happening. That was the way that we got by. We pretended that these things didn't happen. But for me, I had this feeling of doom, this feeling of dread. Every day I would wake up with this and I would go to sleep with this. And that was our life until my mother had a stroke. And she was in a coma for about a week. She woke up and the doctor said, I've learned a few things about how to get along in life. One of the things I've learned from this program is the fewer secrets that you have, the freer you are. And I found that, I have to be very vigilant about secrets. The way I grew up, everything was a secret. My father died, and it took us months to figure out what his financial things were because he didn't tell his wife. And so, we had these weird little funds and things, that we had to figure out. I was just talking to somebody about W.C. Fields. W.C. Fields made millions of dollars in his life, but every time he went into a town, he would open a bank account because he was terrified of becoming broke. And so he'd put $50,000 in this little bank, and they'd ask him what the name of the depositor was, and he'd say, Lucius P. McGonigal. Or he would say, Fred Firefly, or he'd make up a name. The problem was he was drinking a quart of martinis a day and he'd forget the names. They said he lost millions of dollars in accounts because he couldn't remember the names that he'd created, So, all those secrets are like an insulating material. You can't touch other people when you're insulated like that. The other thing I learned is about that feeling of doom, that feeling of the future, is that my higher power doesn't give me any right to know what the future is. That is one of the covenants and conventions of my higher power for me, is that I don't have the right to know what the future is. And I also don't have the right to believe that the future is going to be horrible. Because I have just as much of a chance of something wonderful happening as something terrible happening. I have a stock fund in Ameritrade, and a couple of weeks ago I was looking at it, and one day it made $2,600 in a day. The next day it lost $2,800. And I thought, I don't think I even want to look at this thing anymore, because what difference does it make, you know? It's like, so I don't know, you know, the thing that I've tried to do is to say, you know, something good may happen today. And I'm going to let go of worrying about the awful things that might happen. The other thing I learned, that especially if you're taking care of somebody who has a mental illness or is an alcoholic, is that a husband and wife have to work as a unit. They have to be inseparable. My stepdaughter is a master at manipulating the two of us. She can split us in two very, very, you know, she has the tools to try to split us into two parts and work on each of us. So, you know, we do little things like, if I'm going to call my stepdaughter, I call my wife first. I tell her what I'm going to say. We work out a plan. Then I call my stepdaughter. We have our conversation. Then I call my wife, and we have a debriefing. And it sounds really cumbersome, but you know, the interesting thing is that when I call my wife, I become more focused about what I'm going to talk to my stepdaughter about. I don't tend to become lost in trying to please her. And then when I call my wife back, I can say, here's what happened, here's how it went, here's how I blew it. And then we can talk about that. So, you know, in the old days, I would make some kind of executive decision, and then we'd have an explosion, and then we'd have to clean it up. I still make executive decisions, but I know that I'm screwing up. So, you know, that's just the power of this program, is that it helps me keep my feet on the ground. And in a situation like this, you know, I have love and compassion for my stepdaughter now. I wish that she would make that decision. I hope that she would make that decision. I pray that she makes that decision. But I have no power in there. All I can do is look at the day, see how the day is going, and say to myself, what I'm doing today, is this going to help her, or is this going to hurt her in some way? And then focus myself on the helping part of it. Sometimes the helping part of it is to say, no, we're not bailing you out of jail. Sometimes the helping part of it is to say, you parked your car somewhere it wasn't supposed to be parked, they towed it away, we're very sorry, your car is gone now. All these things have happened. And, you know, it's interesting how many times I've talked with my wife and she's said, if she loses her car, it's all over. She won't be able to do anything. Then she loses her car, and it's not all over. What happens is that everything adjusts itself, and we deal with it. You know, one of the things John Bradshaw said a long time ago was that if somebody in the family changes, it changes everybody else in the family. And I think that's very, very true. I think one of the challenges to that is if someone in the family gets worse, it can change everyone in the family too. And the strength of this program is that it helps you prevent that. It gives you a rudder so that if the wind shifts, you can still proceed in the proper direction. One of the hardest things that I try to do is follow this statement. Learn to wish that everything should come to pass exactly as it does. It's extremely hard. But, you know, when I go to my meetings and I talk to people and I really try to work my program as best I can, I am grateful for what takes place in life. And that feeling of dread goes away. And I wake up with a feeling that I'm a part of the world, which really is what we should all have. That should be our natural state. I found that writing helps me a lot. And, you know, my sponsors told me to write over and over and over again. And I haven't. But my wife subscribes to Scientific American. And like a good rationalist, I was reading an article about writing. And a doctor took 100 engineers who had been fired. He split them up into two groups. One group, he had them write everything about the experience of being fired, how humiliating that was, how resentful they felt, how they hated it so much, how looking for a job was so horrible. The other half, he told them to go look for a job. The half that did the writing got a job in 3 months. The half that didn't do the writing were still looking for a job 9 months later. He stopped the study to tell the other half to start writing. And so the conclusion that they came to was that when you write things down that are negative, you go from a chaotic sort of situation that's in your mind, where you're chaotically picking apart and looking at various aspects of the event. And because you're writing, you have to put it down in a linear kind of fashion. And it forces you to review the event in a different kind of way. And it minimizes the negative parts of that experience. And then you are able to process it and let it go. They found that it does the same thing with positive things. So what they said was, if you're going to write about something positive, just write one sentence. If you're going to write about something negative, go on and on. So that's what I've been doing, and my sponsor's grateful, but probably he has a resentment. But I noticed that does help, and I think that having tools in this program are really important. I think having simple techniques that you can use for your day are great. They're just like the tools that my dad used when he worked on engines. If you don't have the right tool, well, you know, you're going to do a sloppy job. And if you have the right tool, you can do it right. You can do it the way that it's supposed to be done. The other thing, I'm going to close with this quote. To stand on your feet is the most important thing. To sacrifice this moment for your future, for your ideal even, means that you are not standing on your feet. Don't complain. Accept things as they are and satisfy yourself with what you have right now. You should think this is the only reality. Thank you for listening. Okay.